Chapter 13. For the amazing low price of, well, for the price of an implied promise to defend the interests of the Geraptha, Scorandum not only gave us 18 frontline battle cruisers and a stores ship crammed full of spare parts, he also let us borrow 4 Geraptha star carriers to haul away our loot. Maybe I should have held out for a set of floor mats or an extended warranty, but I wanted to get the hell out of there. Get out of there before he scammed me into agreeing to something I didn't have the authority to commit humanity to. Really, I didn't have the authority for even an implied mutual defense agreement. In fact, I had done exactly what Admiral Zhao warned me not to do. With our new top-quality pre-owned starships loaded aboard the star carriers that were commanded by our prize crews, we jumped away. Scorandum had made me promise that I understood those star carriers were only on loan to us. The Beatles expected us to return them as soon as was practical. He actually told me that he wanted the star carriers back as soon as possible, but I told him we would probably be extremely creative about the definition of possible, so he shouldn't expect to see them again soon. The major question for me was, where to go? Scorandum issued an open invitation for meeting with his people, and I mumbled assurances that my people would love to sign a formal alliance at some point in the future. Zhao had told me my top priority should be going to Earth, and I agreed that was a top priority, just maybe not the number one item on the list. We now had the means to make the UN Navy a major power, or at least able to stand up to a fight with either of the senior species. Skippy warned that in their current condition, the battlecruisers were only basically okay. If we wanted them to be something special, they all needed to go to Ragnar for an extensive refit. When those ships came out of the Ragnar space docks, he assured me they would be about 80% as capable as Valkyrie, assuming that Ragnar Station did not get attacked by either or both of the senior species while our new ships were there. You might think that, with our threat to crash the wormhole networks, we didn't need to build a powerful navy. If you think that, I would like to remind you of the stupid crap the Maxulks just tried to do to us. If the kiddies thought they had any alternative to submitting to our terms, they were going to try it, again and again. I was worried sick about that, about them calling my bluff. And direct action by the Maxulks was not the only potential problem. We had seen them goad their clients into attacking us. They could do that again. In my nightmares, the kiddies got the Boss Farrakh or the Theranin or some other client to attack Earth with nukes. The Maxulks could then make a big show of punishing their clients for the supposedly unauthorized attack, while waiting to see whether we responded by crashing the wormhole network in the client's territory. Shit. If you think I slept better after we laid a smackdown on the senior species by faking a partial crash of the wormhole network, you are wrong. Like I said, and I know I say this a lot, I was worried sick about it. When I was at Globacus, I was able to spend time with Margaret, and she should be the one person I can tell my secrets to, but I couldn't. She knew something was bothering me, and she knew I wouldn't talk about it. That had to hurt, me keeping secrets like that. She didn't ask me what was wrong. She just let me know she was there for me, whether I wanted to talk about it or not. That helped. It really did. My life sucks. Anyway, the decision was simple, even if it created more complications for me. Valkyrie escorted our 19 new prize ships to Ragnar, where Skippy disrupted everything. He instructed the shipyard to immediately cease work on the former Geraptha patrol ships and prepare to initiate refits and upgrades to our new fleet of badass battlecruisers. Admiral Rochambeau, who was in charge of Ragnar Station, didn't waste a second by arguing about the disruption to the schedule. He couldn't wait to get his hands on an extinction-class battlecruiser. He was less enthusiastic when we told him of the plan, of the need to tear Ragnar Station apart and move it when the ships currently there had completed their refits. Skippy privately told me it would not be possible to upgrade our new Maxulks battlecruisers and the old Geraptha patrol ships, given the limited raw materials at Ragnar. The station was not intended for long-term use. The designers assumed the station would be detected by the enemy and destroyed not long after the first group of battle-ravaged ships came there for repairs. In that respect, a move to Fob Jaguar would be good. That star system had an extensive belt of metal-rich asteroids, and the planet had some mineral resources that could feed the station's fabricators, assuming we could relocate the critical components of the station to Club Skippy. Why move Ragnar there and not some other place? The answer is simple. Logistics. Our supply chain from Earth was perilously long and perilously thin. Supporting two bases, even if we could find another secure site, was just not practical given the limited resources available. Maybe someday we would have multiple secure forward operating bases, but Jaguar Base would have to be good enough. Yes, moving Ragnar Station to Jaguar would be putting all our ship servicing and fabrication assets in one basket. We knew that. Until we had a better option, or even just the luxury of thinking about a better option, we had to take the risk. Assuming the senior species gave us time to do that before they inevitably came to the rogue planet and nuked Ragnar to radioactive dust. We jumped away from Ragnar, leaving behind the star carriers we borrowed and needed to return someday, and set course not for Earth, but for Fob Jaguar. Yes, we were going to Earth. That was a priority. We were stopping at Jaguar first, because it actually was becoming useful as a forward operating base, like the name said. Valkyrie needed fuel, and the tanks at Ragnar Station were running dry. While we were away, the fuel collection drogue there had suffered a failure that had it running at less than 10% capacity. The station AI was working to fix it, and really did not need or appreciate Skippy's help, but we needed to find another gas station. Skippy also showed me a navigation chart that showed diverting to Jaguar would only add a day to our journey back to Earth, because while he could create wormhole shortcuts to Jaguar, the shortcut options to our home star system were limited. So, we arrived at the Jaguar wormhole to find the UN Navy star carrier Yangtze waiting at the designated point. Attached to Yangtze's long spine were the destroyers Marseille, Sao Paulo, and Boston, along with the assault carrier Caspian Sea. Looking at sensor scans of the battered Sao Paulo, I thought that destroyer would probably be destined to be stripped for parts to keep other ships flying. That sucked for the ship's valiant crew, and I felt bad for Captain Souza. He had to know the likely fate of his ship. Still, he had to be proud of what his little ship accomplished, and relieved to be away from Globacus. The Caspian Sea had aboard the entire battalion of X-Force soldiers who dropped on Globacus. Not a single human remained on that world. There had been talk of leaving a small liaison group to work with the Verds, but that idea got shot down. A good thing, in my opinion. A small group of humans would become a prime target for warrior caste soldiers who refused to acknowledge their planet was under new management. And protecting humans would create a security headache for the Verds at a time when they had to worry about their own safety. The warrior caste on Globacus had lost their grip on power. That did not mean the Verd Chris were the undisputed rulers of the planet. They didn't want to enforce their will on the locals. The whole point of the Verd's experiment on Globacus was to free a Kristang society from the iron fist of the warrior caste and see what developed. Hopefully, the other castes, likely led by the merchants' guilds, would take over leadership, made easier because the merchants had already been in a power-sharing arrangement with the warrior caste. Eventually, the Verd Chris wanted to move further to restore Kristang culture to its original form before that culture got twisted and perverted to serve the needs of their Therenan overlords. The Verds were playing the long game, being patient, content with baby steps. There would be setbacks, they understood that. What they cared about was overall movement in the right direction, and they were realistic about the pace and scope of change they could accomplish. Though women were in positions of authority in Verd society, most of the Verds who dealt directly with the merchant guilds on Globacus were men to avoid alarming the locals. The Verds eventually wanted to improve the status of women in Kristang society. They also understood that would be a very long-term process. Kristang females had been genetically engineered to be small and submissive and less intelligent, so cultural oppression was not the only barrier to their achieving equality. As much as it had to frustrate the Verds to see their cousins acting submissively, there wasn't anything to be done about it in the short term. The goal of the Verds was to overthrow the warrior caste across all Kristang territory. The best way to accomplish that was to show other castes the advantages of taking back control of their clans. Forcing the male Kristang on Globacus to accept genetic modification of their female property would be counterproductive and unite other castes with the warriors against the Verd Chris. Damn. I hoped the Verd succeeded. I was also glad that accomplishing their fanatical goals were not on my to-do list. I had enough to worry about. Margaret was aboard the assault carrier Caspian Sea, and we exchanged brief messages before Skippy opened the wormhole and Valkyrie escorted the Yangtze through. Then we left the star carrier behind. I was in a hurry. Jumping into one of the designated zones near Fob Jaguar, I sent a ping to Admiral Zhao. "General Bishop," he responded. "What news of Earth?"
"Ah, we haven't been there yet," I announced.
His eyes narrowed and I could see his jaw clench, so I added, "I can explain." I explained. He swore in Mandarin, but I had heard Chang use the same curse. He wasn't pissed off at me. It was more of a holy shit sort of thing.
"General Bishop, every time I think you have run out of surprises," he sighed.
I sympathized with the guy. "Sir, I kinda hope I don't run out of surprises, but yeah, I know what you mean."
18 battle cruisers of Valkyrie's class?
He leaned forward toward the camera on his desk. Text at the bottom of the display showed he had shifted his flag to the battlecruiser Loire instead of the Pacific. The former flagship had gotten seriously beaten up by the two senior species of Klopeth to the point where I didn't know if it was worth repairing. Now, with the prospect of vastly more capable ships being added to the UN Navy, ships with severe battle damage might have to wait, possibly even be scrapped.
"How many will be flight-worthy?"
Skippy says all 18 will be fully combat-capable. I added, "not every one of them will get the same upgrade package. Ragnar Station is running low on raw materials." A tiny bit of the joy faded from his expression as he remembered the enormous task ahead of us.
"What are you doing next?"
"We're just here to hit the gas station for a fill-up and wipe of blades, then we're going straight to Earth."
"Please, no detours this time. Your threat to crash wormhole networks has not deterred the Maxalks from aggressive action. I fear their failure to capture Skippy and the humiliation of being fooled by the Gerapha might make them want to hit us again, to show their fragile coalition they are not weak. Perhaps you could remind them of the consequences?"
"Sir?"
Then he said what I was afraid someone would suggest. "Perhaps you should temporarily crash a wormhole network in their territory. Explain it is retaliation for their attempting to ambush Valkyrie."
Oh, shit. I couldn't crash a wormhole network at all, and I also couldn't explain why.
"It's not that easy, sir. Especially the temporary part. It's complicated."
Skippy and I had cooked up a cover story in case someone in authority wanted us to crash another network. The cover story had some holes that we hoped people didn't see, so it was best to avoid having to explain it all. My worst nightmare was being presented with a situation where we had to crash a network, because, of course, we couldn't actually do it.
"Make it permanent, then," Zhao said, his jaw set with determination. "Choose a local network that is not vital to the Maxalks, and shut it down. As a signal to them and the rest of the galaxy of the price for attacking us."
Sir, Admiral, I think that's a call for UNEF Command to make."
"Very well," he agreed. "General, I am not confident the Maxalks will cooperate."
After my tough talk when we faked crashing the wormhole networks, I had steadily been losing confidence also. The Maxalks might be too stubborn to back down. If they were going to lose their empire, they might decide to go down fighting and take us with them. "They haven't responded yet. Neither have the Rindaloo, not officially. We can reach some sort of compromise, but they have to talk with us."
"Go to Earth. Inform UNEF Command of the situation. This is, as you Americans say, above our pay grades."
"Yes, sir."
"Geez, Joe," Skippy said just after Sims and I ended the call with Zhao. "That was a happy conversation."
"It's not a happy situation," I mumbled while cradling my head in my hands. "We smacked them in the face with mutual assured destruction, and they attacked Earth with a cloud. We showed them we can crash wormhole networks, and they still won't back down. Maybe they're like that scorpion.
What scorpion?
Leaning back in my chair, I stared at the ceiling. It's an old fable. A scorpion wants to get across a river and asks a frog for a ride. Frog says, no way, you will sting me. Scorpion says he won't sting because then he will drown too. So the frog lets the scorpion hop on its back and start swimming. Halfway across the river, the scorpion stings the frog. As the frog is dying, it asks the scorpion why. The scorpion says he couldn't help it. It's his nature.
You are saying maybe the Maxulks can't back down, no matter the consequences?
Yeah. You got any ideas?
At this point, no.
When we go to Earth, are you really leaving the decision-making to UNEF Command?
Absolutely. I know, they are dumb monkeys. Listen, Skippy, I can't keep making calls that affect all of humanity, you know? Besides, they may have a good idea, and don't laugh. I shook a finger at him as he snorted. The UN has a lot more experience with diplomacy than I do. Maybe after we crash the wormhole networks. I shot a guilty look at my closed office door. I shouldn't have issued demands.
It felt good, though, right?
Yeah, that's the problem.
In this job, if I'm doing some tough guy thing that feels good, I'm doing the wrong thing. Now I'm thinking I should have just offered to open negotiations. Instead, I gave the Maxulks a deadline and threatened to destroy their entire empire if they failed to comply.
Shit.
If there's a chance to salvage the situation before the Maxulks blow up the whole freaking galaxy, I need to step back and let the experts talk to the seniors.
Good luck with that.
This is a happy conversation.
Sorry.
Joe, I did warn you that the identity of the Maxulks is tied to their sense of superiority. If you threaten to destroy that, they view it as a threat to their existence.
You're saying they are a problem that can't be solved?
I'm saying maybe that's true.
Yeah, well, I don't believe any problem is unsolvable. We're not giving up.
How long will it take to fill our fuel tanks and get out of here?
16 hours, give or take.
That answered my question about whether I would have time to spend with Margaret. By the time the Yangtze arrived, we would be gone.
It's probably for the best. I wouldn't have been good company anyway.
16 hours. Leaning toward Sims, I asked quietly. What do you think, Exo?
Shore leave?
She knew what I was thinking.
We can cycle the crew in shifts, but it will have to be quick.
Hey, Joe, what you doing?
Skippy's voice blared in my earpiece, startling me so I nearly sliced off a thumb. I was in the kitchen of my parents' house at Club Skippy. Like the rest of Valkyrie's crew, I had 6 hours on the surface before I had to catch a flight back upstairs. My family was thrilled to see me and glad to hear Zhao was bringing the Navy back to Jaguar. Seeing them washed away the foul mood Skippy had put me in, and I wanted a few freaking minutes without him blah-blah-blahing at me.
Shit, don't do that.
I'm chopping onions. What does it look like?
I can see what you're doing or what you are clumsily attempting to do.
Seriously, wouldn't it be safer if you used a plastic knife or a spoon?
Why are you such an asshole?
Jeez, I tried to prevent a buddy from slicing off an appendage and I was perfectly safe until you helped.
I made air quotes when I said the word help. And since I forgot I was holding a very sharp knife, nearly sliced off an ear.
Margaret is not into the whole Van Gogh thing, so I set the knife down. There were enough onions chopped anyway.
I'm making guacamole for lunch.
You?
Yes, me.
Joe, you're from Maine. Your people think maple sugar on snow is too spicy.
What do you know about wok?
I know it is delicious, thank you very much. My parents love it. I'm making it for them.
Do you know how to select a ripe avocado?
Yes. I looked at the bowl of avocados that might or might not be ripe.
Unless you want to help.
Well, if you insist.
I kinda do.
Okay, how about... I picked up an avocado from a bowl on the counter and squeezed it gently.
This one?
That one?
No, wait until tomorrow, maybe.
This one?
Nope.
This one?
Nobody nope.
Are you helping or not?
I'm trying to.
His avatar appeared on the counter, pointing to an avocado on the bottom of the bowl.
Try that one.
I sniffed it.
and squeezed it gently.
Is it ripe?
Not yet.
Wait!
He shouted as I was about to set it down. Don't be so impatient, numbskull. It's not ripe yet.
Okay, not yet. Not yet. Almost. Almost. Getting there. 3, 2, 1.
Ah, too late. It's overripe mush. Better throw it away.
Skippy is an asshole, but he has a point about avocados. They can be hard as a rock sitting on your kitchen counter for days, then you turn away for 2 freaking seconds and it's a lump of mush covered in fruit flies. I think Satan created avocados to screw with us. Anyway, I waited for my mom to return home, and she identified 2 nice ripe avocados. I'm happy to report that the guacamole was delicious. My secret ingredient? Real maple syrup? Admiral Reichert instructed his glands to secrete a calming hormone into his bloodstream and took deep, even breaths while he waited for the chemicals to take effect. When an internal monitor indicated his stress factors were down to normal levels, he bared his fangs to the guards who opened the doors to the conference chamber. The doors closed behind him with a solid thunk sound, an effect engineered into the mechanism to impress upon the occupants the seriousness of the proceedings in the chamber. Ranged around him, as he stood in the center of the oval room, were tiers of seats in a half circle, but only a handful of seats were occupied. Only the most powerful leaders of the hegemony military were allowed to discuss events that affected their entire society, to make decisions that could shake the galaxy. The primary purpose of the meeting was to discuss the most recent secret operation that had been approved by the Executive Council, an initiative to capture the elder AI called Skippy by enlisting the help of the Jirapatha, an operation that was an unquestionable disaster in every possible way. The hegemony had lost 8 frontline warships to enemy action, 18 capital ships plus a stores ship full of valuable weapons and material had been stolen. The Jirapatha had made fools of the beings who considered themselves the rightful rulers of the galaxy. And the survivors of the disaster had no clue how the Jirapatha accomplished the double cross, other than vague hints the elder AI was involved. So, the Skippy entity was assisting the Jirapatha as well as the humans, at least to a limited extent. There was no way to downplay the scope of the disaster. The Ethics and Compliance Office was known for being bold and taking major risks, but even they would not have moved forward without approval at the highest level of their government. The Jirapatha must have carefully weighed the value they could get from a successful operation against the inevitable retaliation from the Maxulk's hegemony, and decided the potential gain was worth the price. Decided the Maxulks were not so scary as they used to be. That was the real danger. A great part of the hegemony's power was derived from fear. If other species no longer feared what the Maxulks could do, the simple fact was even their vast military machine could not hold their sprawling and bickering coalition together. There was no way for Reichert to pretend the latest operation he had planned was not a complete disaster, nor could he dodge the blame. Fortunately for him, he did not have to. The Executive Council had unanimously approved the operation, a council from which he had forced out all of his rivals. If his career was sunk because of the disaster, the members of the council would go down with him.
"There is no need to repeat information you already know," Reichert opened. "It was a worthy effort. We tried, and we failed," he said, emphasizing he was not the only one to blame. "We were betrayed, and we'll punish those who dared to insult us."
There was an agreeable murmur around the room, the participants all speaking via primitive means rather than using their implants.
"If the humans were involved, they were foolish. They could have instructed their Jirapatha lackeys to decline our offer. Now I am afraid they have forced our hand. My esteemed colleagues, I believe we have no alternative. The power of the humans will continue to grow. Already they are in process of splitting the Jirapatha away from the Rindaloo Coalition. The danger to us grows every day."
"Will not the loss of the Jirapatha weaken the coalition of our ancient enemy?"
Admiral Wendatti asked.
"It will," Reichert agreed. Until very recently, we would have welcomed such an event. Consider this. The Rindaloo have been largely passive, and in their decadence they have been very permissive about allowing their clients to develop, allowed their clients to choose their own path forward, which we know is a weakness. However, the Rindaloo have also generally restrained the more adventurous members of their coalition. Free from control by the Rindaloo, the Jarraptha will likely become even more aggressive, more dangerous. Because their coalition will be weaker if they lose the Jarraptha, the Rindaloo might finally be forced from their long slumber and act directly against us. We will be caught between two powerful enemies, while our own coalition is fractured and divided, he said, without noting who was responsible for the disarray in their coalition. By making demands we cannot agree to, unreasonable demands, the humans have forced us to consider the unthinkable.
You said we have no alternative.
When Daddy leaned forward, anxious.
What course of action do you propose? We cannot agree to the terms offered by the humans, and the Rindaloo...
We will not submit to the demands of the humans,
Rikard declared to appreciative murmurs. Of course, those in the council chamber agreed with him. He had manipulated events to force his enemies and rivals off the council. Those who remained knew their fates were tied to this.
Nor can we trust the Rindaloo to coordinate efforts with us to contain the humans. Esteemed colleagues, he paused for effect, looking from one face to another. We must recommend to our leadership that it is time to activate the Doomsday Plan.